I would let you visit more if we had time to blow this evening. But we just got a lot of content we're going to try to get through. So we're going to start in Revelation 1, Revelation 13, 1 through 10. So the dragon stood on the shore of the sea. Now we're going to use, this is once again, we're going to see an interweaving of Daniel 7 and an interweaving of the Nero legend of the West, that form. Now we're not going to take time to read this because our time is limited this evening. But what I've done in Revelation 13 is I have underlined all of the language that comes from Daniel chapter 7. And remember, which is the one chapter in the Old Testament that John quotes from more than any other? Daniel chapter 7. I'm submitting to you the reason why is because the hope of Daniel chapter 7 is the same hope of the entire book of Revelation. Look in your grace section, look all the way down to the almost the bottom. In Daniel 7:14, it says, "And he, the Son of Man, was given what? Authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples and nations and languages did what? Worshipped him." That is the climax. That is the point of Daniel chapter 7. It is the point of the entire book of Revelation. So it says, "The dragon stood on the seashore, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea." Now remember, he was ticked off at the woman being hidden, so he goes to make war with the rest of her offspring. That's right. And the way he does this is here. He's standing on the shore of the sea and he calls forth a beast. It had, what does it say? 10 horns, 7 heads with 10 crowns on its head. And on each head it had what? Blasphemous name. Now I've actually put in bold where the Nero legend is quoted. And these are almost direct quotes in the Greek from those Nero legends that we read earlier. You'll see the parallels. "The beast resembled a leopard, but it had feet like a bear and a mouth like a..." The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and his great authority. That is capitalized just because I want you to note that. "One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the wound would have been healed." This is the Nero legend of the West. Nero had been dethroned, but he would return. That wound would be healed. It says, "The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the what?" Did we see in the legend that all would believe in this return Nero? And it says, "People worshiped the dragon because it had given authority to the beast, and they also worshiped the beast who asked, 'Who is like the beast and who can make war against it?'" The beast, try to get just the storyline for now. It says, "The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and" what? "Blasphemies" again, "to exercise authority for" how long? Here's that prophetic period under which the church will be its witness, a witness to the Lamb. "It opened its mouth to blaspheme" who? "And to slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. And it was given power to make war against God's people and" to what? "Conquer them." What does that mean? To kill them. Okay, remember Revelation 11. They will be killed by the beast that comes up out of the abyss. "And it was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation." Now, who is claiming to be their king? From Revelation chapter 1, who's claiming to be the king of these people? Well, yes, that's not the one I'm looking for. Who's claiming to be their king? The Lamb. Who are they right now having to submit to the authority of? The dragon, or the beast here, yes. And it says, "All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, all whose names have not been written in the Lamb's book of life, the Lamb who was slain from the creation of the world." That's interesting. How many remember that phrase? That he, let's go back to that. I want you to see it actually. Go back to the Nero legend. See if I can find it here. There it is. Go back to your Nero legend. Flip over to the back. Well, actually, read the bottom. Belial will descend, the great angel, the king of this world, which he has ruled ever since it what? Existed. He uses this language, but instead of applying it to Nero or to Rome, who does he apply it to? It's the Lamb who was slain since from the creation of the world, which in the Greek is since it ever existed. It says, when whoever has ears, let him hear. If anyone goes into captivity they will go. This is the encouragement. If anyone kills with the sword they will be what? What goes around comes around. Do not take up the sword against them. This calls for what? Patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of God's people. Now let's look at some of this. In Luke 4, 5 through 6, it says, the devil led him up to a high place and showed him in an instant. How many? All the kingdoms of this world, and said to him, I will give you how much? All their authority and its splendor. It has been given to, and I give it to whomever I what? Now what John is doing is saying that this dragon, the devil, is here giving this authority. Does it belong to him anymore, by the way? No, it's been taken by who? The Lamb. But the devil still, the dragon still taking it and giving that authority to this beast in Revelation 13, which is the return of Nero. Now bear with me. Exodus 15:11. Look at this language. Who among the gods is what? Like you, O Lord. Who is like you? Look at Psalms 86, 8 through 10. Among the gods there is, what does it say? None like you, Lord. No deeds can compare with yours. All the nations you have made will come and what? Worship before you. Lord, they will bring glory to your name, for you are great and do marvelous deeds. You alone are what? Whom does John have saying these words in Revelation 13? It's the beast. It's the people. They're saying, who is like the beast? Who can make war against it? There's none like it. In Revelation 21, 24, notice though the end result. This is not the end of the story. The end of the story is Revelation 21. The nations will walk by its what? And the kings of the earth will bring their, or their glory into it. Talking about the New Jerusalem. So we know it's not the end of the story. Daniel 7, 14, again, all nations, peoples, every language worshiped him, the Son of Man. What does it mean to blaspheme? Look at John 10, 33. Jesus answered, it is not for a good work that we are going to stone you, but for what? Blasphemy, because you, though only being a human being, you make yourself out to be what? God. Remember what the Nero legend says. It says, I am the Lord. Before me there was no one. All men in the world will believe in him. They will say, this is the Lord. Besides him there is no other. And the majority of those who have associated together to receive the Beloved will turn to him. Now look at Revelation 13. Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth, and it had two horns like a what? But it spoke like a what? Dragon. Now this is significant. We want to find out who they would have seen in this imagery. They would have seen the Nero legend of the West in the first beast's imagery. Who do they see in this one? It says, it had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the what? Authority of the first beast on its, and it made the earth and its inhabitants do what? Worship the beast whose fatal wound had been, and it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to earth in full view of everyone. Remember that. We'll come back to that in a moment. Because of the signs it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up a what? An image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet what? This is Nero in his return. It was given power to give breath to the image of the beast so that it would, what? Speak, give breath to the image of the first beast. It would speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hands are on there, so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its. This calls for wisdom. Let those who have insight calculate the number of the what? For it is the number of a, and that number is what? 666. Now, let's look at some of the language first. Revelation 13:3. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a, but that fatal wound had been healed. That the phrase there, fatal wound, is the same exact Greek word taken in Revelation 5:6. Then I saw between the throne and the four living creatures and among the elders of the Lamb standing, a lamb standing as if it had been, what's that word? Slaughtered. That is the same Greek word that's translated fatal wound here in Revelation 13. So what John is wanting you to see is this is an imitation of who? Of Christ, of the Lamb, of Jesus. In Revelation 13:12, it says, "It exercised all the power of that first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been what? Healed." What he's doing is he's drawing a parallel between the lamb that was slain and Nero who was dethroned. And he goes on in Revelation 2:8. Look at this. It says, "Then the angel of the church of Smyrna write, these are the words of the first and the last who was dead and," what does it say? "Came to life." In Revelation 13:14, it says, "Because of the signs it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, it deceived the inhabitants of the earth, and it ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet did what?" That word, Greek word there for lived, is the same Greek word in Revelation 2, verse 8, that says came to life. In Revelation 1:18, it says, "I am the living one who was dead and am alive." That's the, all of those are the same Greek word. So what John is wanting to bring to your attention by using these quotes between language that he used to refer to the lamb and language that he's referred to Nero returning after being slain is, yes, to all intents and purposes, it looks like this power gained victory over the sword. Do you know the principle is, if you live by violence, you will what? Die by violence. But the legend was, as he suffered violence, but he's going to come back and rule the world. It's a contradiction to that principle. Remember, that's why it said in Revelation 13, remember what it said, if you live by the sword, if you kill by the sword, you must be what? Killed by the sword. This calls for patient endurance on the part of the... Your hope is not to be in this return of Nero. Your hope is to be in the Lamb who was slain and yet lives, not Nero who was slain and yet lives. Are you with me so far? Can you see how they would have gotten this so far? Now, some other passages we need to look at. Let me read this to you, actually. If you're going through this online, this will probably be on the handout by then because I just found it this morning. I didn't have time to, this had already been printed. But this is from Pliny to Trajan. And this was a governor of Rome writing to his superior about the Christians he had been putting on trial. And I just want you to read it so you can get the imagery. "An anonymous document was published containing the names of many persons who were accused of being Christian. Those who denied that they were or had been Christians, when they invoked the gods in words dictated by me and offered a prayer with incense and wine to your image, which I had ordered to be brought for this purpose, together with the statutes of the gods, and moreover cursed Christ, none of which those who are really Christians, it is said, can be forced to do, these I thought should be discharged. Since they bowed down to the image of Rome, of the Caesar, then you could let them off the hook. They're not really Christians." And it says, "Others named by the informer declared that they were Christians, but then denied it, asserting that they had been, but had ceased to be. Some 3 years before, others many years before, some as many as 25 years before. They all worshipped your image and the statutes of the gods and cursed Christ. How many can see in this worshiping in the image language? How many could see that the first century Christians would have taken this language by Rome and seen their own situation in it? They didn't have history to rely on. They didn't know anything was going to come down the pike. They would have just seen it as talking about the situation that they are called to endure. If you're with me so far, say yes. In Revelation 2, verse 28, let's try to unpack some of this lamb-like image. We see the first beast in Revelation 13 that's patterned after the imagery of Daniel. We see that he is the near return of Nero according to the legend of the West. But who's this lamb-like beast that comes up out of the earth? What is that talking about? Well, first of all, it's lamb-like. But it's lamb-like, but speaks like a what? So on the outside, it looks like it's following who? The lamb. But who does it really following? The dragon. That's right. Now, notice some of these parallels. Revelation 2:28. Even as I received authority from my what? Whom did the lamb receive authority from? Whom did Nero or the beast receive authority from? The dragon. Flip over. Go to handout number 2. Revelation 19:20. Is that right? 19:20. But the beast was what? Captured, and with him the false prophet who had performed signs on his behalf, and with these signs he had deluded those who had received the mark of the beast and worshipped the image. The two of them were thrown alive into a fiery lake of burning sulfur. All I want you to see in this passage is this lamb-like beast that causes people to receive a mark and to worship the image of the first beast. This lamb-like beast here is given a title. It's called the false what? Prophet. So here's parallel number one. Did the dragon give the beast his authority in Revelation 13? Did the Father give the Lamb authority? Okay. Does the beast have a false prophet that will work others to worship, that will inspire others to worship the beast? Does the Lamb have prophets or a prophet that will inspire others to worship worship the Lamb? Yes. Notice the parallels. In Revelation 11:4, it says they stand before the Lord of the earth. Now, we talked about these guys last night. This is Revelation 11. These are those two witnesses, remember? The church and its prophetic role as a witness. They stand before the Lord. Notice what it says about this lamb-like beast. It says he exercises all the authority of the first beast. What are those three words? In his presence. Now, you don't see this in the English, but in the Greek, it's a direct quote. The stand before the Lord, the stand before, is a direct quote there in Revelation 13:12, saying, in his presence. It's the same Greek words, it's just different English words. In Revelation 13:14, it repeats it. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the sign which it was given him to perform in his what? In the presence of the first beast. Now, I wish some of you knew Greek tonight. If you did, we could sit down and parse it and I could show you how it's a direct quote. You don't, all right? So even though it's English, just see what we're seeing here. Again, did the dragon give the beast its authority? Did the Father give the Lamb authority? Yes. Does the dragon have a false prophet? Does, according to Revelation 11, the Lamb have a true prophet, the church, giving forth a witness? Yes. And does that prophet that the Lamb have, does it stand in his presence and give that witness? Yes. Does this false prophet stand in the presence of the beast and give his false witness where he deceives the world? Well, another parallel that I think is wildly beautiful is that, remember the witness in Revelation 11, the true prophet, the true witness of the Lamb? They have the power of Elijah, but they choose to use the methods of the Lamb. Are you with me? It says it calls fire down from heaven in the sight of. This is a false prophet that has the power of who? Elijah, and chooses not to use the methods of the Lamb, but that violent methodology. It looks like a lamb, But it speaks like a what? Saying, follow or be killed. The imagery is actually taken from Daniel 3 as well, where Nebuchadnezzar sets up an image and says, whoever does not worship the image will be thrown into a blazing furnace. John says anybody who does worship, in Daniel 3, it's whoever doesn't worship the image. Whoever does worship the image. In Daniel 3, it's whoever doesn't worship the image will be thrown into a blazing furnace. John takes it, flips it on its head, and in Revelation, it's whoever does worship the image will be thrown into a blazing furnace. How many can see him turning it, switching it, turning its head again? Yes. We'll talk about that blazing furnace when we get there. Just hang in there. Again, Deuteronomy 11 is where this language is taken from. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and your minds. Tie them as symbols on your what? Hands, and bind them on your forehead. Those were the commands of God in the Old Testament. These people have the name, the mark on their hands or their foreheads, showing that they're following the beast instead. Revelation 14, verse 1, it says, then I looked, and there before me was what? The Lamb standing on Mount Zion with 144,000, having His name and His Father's name written on their foreheads. So what we have is this parallel. And see if you can get this first. You have the Father who gives authority to the Lamb who has a prophet or a witness in Revelation 11. If you can see that, say yes. What we have here is a dragon who gives his authority to the beast, and it also has a prophet or a witness that makes everyone follow the beast. But remember, the prophet looks like a what? A lamb, but acts like a... I'm going to read to you from the Nero legend again, because this would have been the most tragic part of the Nero legend. The majority of those who have associated together to receive the Beloved will turn after Him, will turn after the beast. The majority. See, this was the warning of Revelation 13. Don't follow Rome. Even if Rome gets restored, don't follow Rome. Keep following the what? The Lamb. Now, would first century Christians have seen the potential for followers of Jesus under this kind of pressure to cave, to worship His image and deny and curse Christ? Would they have seen that represented in this lamb-like power? Would they have seen that? Yes. Have Christians always seen this imagery in Revelation 13 of the second lamb, or the second beast, the lamb-like beast? Have Christians in every era seen this as a warning not to live in partnership with empire, but to live in partnership with the Lamb? In the 16th century, Christians saw this imagery as typifying papal Rome and how it had become a state religion. Today, people say it's Christians using the power of America. God forbid that should ever happen, but do you see people trying to make that happen, to enforce its morality? See, people of every era have always seen, but I'm submitting to you that the first century Christians would have seen it too, and it would have been a call for them not to be a part of this false prophet group. Stay faithful to the Lamb. Don't bow to empire. Don't worship the empire's image. Stay faithful to who? To the real Lamb. Let's look at some numerology for a moment, and then we'll be done with Revelation 13. We might get through 14. Woo, we're making good time. Better time I thought we would. 7 in the book of Revelation, again, is about totality or completeness. If you're with me, say yes. 4 is the symbol of the world. You've got 4 corners of the world, 4 winds, the north, east, west, and south. It's also interesting that whenever he talks about the earth, it's in 4 parts: the heaven, the earth, the sea, the rivers. And when he talks about the people, he talks about every nation, people, tribe, and language. World is symbolic, or is symbolized by the number 4. If you can see that, say yes. Babylon, it's interesting, has 28 products in Revelation 18. What is 28 the product of? 4 times 7, this totality over the world, this rule over the whole world. Jesus is actually called the one who lives forever and ever. Guess how many times? 4 times. It's right there. This is not a no-brainer. Yes, it's right there. It's written there. And I'm giving you all the answers to the questions I'm asking you. 4 times, which means this is the guy that's going to rule over the world. Lord God Almighty. Guess how many times that's mentioned? There you go. You're reading. One who sits on the throne. How many times? Alpha and Omega. How many times? Christ is mentioned. How many times? Jesus is mentioned. How many times? 14, which is 2, the number of the witnesses, times 7. The Lamb is mentioned how many times? 28 times, which is 4, the world, times 7. So the Lamb's going to rule over the whole world, totality. Nations, tribes, this is interesting. The Lamb is mentioned 28 times. Nations, languages, tribes, and peoples, guess how many times it's mentioned? 7, but it's a fourfold phrase. So 7 times 4 again is what number? 20. See, this is the stuff that would have intrigued a certain section of John's audience. How many here, anybody here mathematicians? Anybody here really? I mean, let me recommend, if you're really into this kind of stuff, let me recommend a book to you by a professor at Cambridge. This is not a loony bin. Are you with me? This is a retired professor from Cambridge University. His name is Richard Bauckham, B-A-U-C-K-H-A-M. And you want to look up the chapter in this book, The Climax of Prophecy. You want to look up the chapter, Nero... Oh, it's just the one that says Nero. I don't remember what the rest of the chapter is called. But it has, it's the only chapter that has the word Nero in it. But he goes through some of the numbering, and he goes through rectangular numbers, triangular numbers, and some of the math that they were doing in the first century and cool stuff. And if you're into that, man, knock yourself out. I am not a mathematician. I have no interest in that kind of stuff. But if you are, there's a good resource for you. 12 is the number of God's people. 144,000. Is 12 squared multiplied by the largest number in Revelation, which is 1,000. These are too many to be accidental. That's the point. John is doing all of this intentionally on purpose. Now, there's two ways of using numbers that are used in the book of Revelation. The first one is where you take the number, or you take the numeric values of the alphabetic letters in a person's name, and you give that name a number. This was found in Pompeii. It was graffiti, basically, found on one of the walls there. It says, "I love the girl whose number is 545. Well, that girl would have known who that was. This was kind of just what they did back then. It was way more common than it is today. There was another one, isosceph, which was slick because what it did was it took the number of two different things, and if they had the same number, it associated the two. Like the Greek form of Nero comes out to what number there does it say? 1,005. That's the Greek form. That's important because we'll look at the Hebrew form in a moment. The Greek phrase killed his own mother. Guess what number that phrase comes out to when you add up all the letters? 1,005. So this is just little stuff that people would have found intriguing. It really doesn't mean anything, all right? It's just stuff that they would have found intriguing back then. Revelation 21:17. I want to show you an outside example where John actually uses this. It says he measured the wall, talking about the city of New Jerusalem. It measured its wall, and it was how many cubits thick? By human measurement, which is the angel. That doesn't make grammatic sense. What do you mean, which is the angel? Well, it's interesting. The Greek word angel translated into Hebrew, the Hebrew form of that Greek word is, guess which number? 144. So that's what he's saying. It's the number of the angel. In Revelation 13:18, this is important. And I've given you the Hebrew characters over there and what their numeric values are so you can see it. But in Revelation 13:18, it says, this calls for what? Wisdom. Let those who have insight calculate the number of the beast. It is also the number of a what? The Greek word beast, translated into Hebrew, guess which number it comes out to? 666. The word beast equals 666. So he says it is the number of the beast. Does beast equal 666? Yes. Then he says it's also the number of a what? And whom did we say the early Christians would have seen this being about the legend of his return? Whom did we say they would have seen it as? Nero. Nero Caesar, written in Hebrew characters, equals guess which number, which total? 666. Now, I haven't marked it out there because I couldn't find Hebrew fonts to use. That's just a copy and paste. But you can do the math. And you can actually even Google it. You'll find it. I'm not making this up. Revelation 13:17 says it's the name of the beast or the number of its name. They would have seen this all as pointing to Nero, at the return of Nero. Remember, it's the one of the West where he brings forth. But what's the whole point? We're going to see the whole point is even if this does come true, you shouldn't be hoping in the return of Nero. He's a counterfeit of the Lamb who was slain and has risen. You should be hoping for the victory of the Lamb. We go to Revelation 14. Well, let's see if we can get through this. Man, I'm hoping. This is such a cool chapter if we can finish the whole thing. Let's see how fast we can go. Then I looked, and there was before me the Lamb. This isn't a lamb-like beast. This is the real deal now. Standing on where? Mount Zion. And with him, how many? Remember, we saw this in Revelation 7. This is the army of the Lamb. And it says, who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. Names were indicative of character. In John 12, this is what Jesus said. Now my soul's become troubled, talking about the cross. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your what? Who you really are. Glorify who you are. Here they have the Father's name and the Lamb's name written on their foreheads. I find it interesting that they do not have two separate names. It's the same name. Are you with me? It just happens to be the same name as the Father, the same name as the Lamb. This is the equivalent of, in symbolic fashion, John saying exactly what Jesus said. Anyone who has seen me has seen the who? The Father. They have the same character. Are you with me? God looks like that. God looks like that. That's what Jesus came to show us. You say, well, Herb, what about? Well, look at what Hebrews 1 says. In the past, God did speak to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in different ways, different than what looks like a lamb. And it says, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his who? The Son is the radiance of God's what? The exact representation of his. Strip away all concessions, strip away all accommodations, strip away all of God having to meet people where they're at. If you want to see what God's really like, if he's just allowed to be himself, he looks like that. That's the character of God. That's what John's trying to get across to us here. They know this. They have this sealed in their forehead. They see it. And it says, I heard the sound from heaven like the roar of rushing waters, like a loud peal of thunder. And the sound I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. And they sang a what? Again, please remember, that's from Psalms 96 and Psalms 98. You can write that in your margin if you need to, which talks about the conversion of the nations. Before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders, no one can learn this song except for who? Who had been redeemed from the earth. These are those who did not defile themselves with women, for they remained virgins. We'll understand what that means in just a second. And they follow not the first beast. They follow the Lamb. And it says, wherever he goes, they were purchased from among the human race, offered as what? Remember what first fruits means. It does not mean instead of. It means first in a chronological order. Just the first of. And it says, no lie was found in there. We'll explain that in a second. For they are without what? blemish. We'll look at that in a moment as well. Again, the new song is Psalms 96 and 98. It's a call to the nations to submit to the just and equitous reign of the Lamb. Revelation 5, 9, again, remember, it says they sang a new song. It's talking about the army. You are worthy to take the scroll and open its what? Because you were slain, and with your blood you ransomed for God members of every tribe, language, people, and nation. For you have made them to be a kingdom of priests to serve our God. They will reign on the earth. I want you to get the imagery. In Revelation 13, we've just seen how everybody is following the beast. There's a false prophet that's deceiving them and getting them even to follow the beast. But the prophecy still remains. In Revelation 14, we see 144,000 who are the first fruits of every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. It's the promise that just as they have seen God for who He is and have chosen to follow Him, if they can just see God for who He is, they will choose to follow Him as well. The 144,000 are not instead of every nation, kindred, tongue, and tribe, and people. They are just the first fruits of every kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. This is what they would have seen in the language. Look at Leviticus 23, 9 through 14 again. It talks about, you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. Romans 16, 5, it says, greet also the church that meets in their house. Greet my dear friend Epaphras, who was the first convert to Christ in the province of Asia. Does that mean first convert instead of? No, he's just first in a certain order, the first one chronologically. The Greek word there for first convert is first fruits. In 1 Corinthians 16, 15, it says Stephanas were the first what? Converts, the first fruits. That's right, 1 Corinthians 15, 20. But Christ indeed has been raised from the dead, the what? The first, is Christ going to be raised instead of the rest of us? No, he's the first one to be raised. Romans 11, 16, if the part of the dough offered as first fruits is holy, then the whole batch is what? If the root is holy, so are the branches. Now look at 1 Samuel, we'll talk about this for a second. But the priest answered David. Now remember, David and his mighty men were hungry. They came to the temple. There was no food except for the showbread. The priest was going to break the rules and let him eat the showbread. But he wanted to make sure something that it says, he wanted to make sure. He says, I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there's some consecrated bread here, provided that these men have kept themselves from what? Women. David replied, indeed, women have been kept from us as usual whenever I set out. The men's bodies are what? Holy, even on missions that are not holy. How much more so today? See, not being with women, whether this is right or wrong, in the Jewish culture meant that they were holy. How many are thankful that was back then and not now? I know it's derogatory towards women. I get it. Sick. But this is how that culture viewed it. They were very patriarchal. And if you were going to be part of the army, you needed the army of Israel. What ensured your victory was holiness. And so, once again, this is military language. If you can see that, say yes. The only point that John is making is not that women make us unclean, men. That is not the point you're to take from John's words here. How many are thankful for that? The only point that you're to take from John's use of this kind of language is that this is militaristic language, a militaristic requirement of the Old Testament. Therefore, what we see this 144,000 being is a militaristic body. It is the army of the Lamb, although it is an army, remember what we saw in Joel chapter 2, an army like there never has been nor ever will be, because just as Jesus looked like that, just as God looks like that, this army, it looks like you can just stomp on them and wipe them out, and how could they ever win? This army too follows this army looks like that too. I know we are tempted to doubt that nonviolence really will win the world, but it really will in the end. Follow the Lamb. Revelation 13:3, remember what it says. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed, and the whole world was filled with wonder. What did they do? Followed the beast. See, they see Nero's return according to the legend. He was wounded, but he came back to life. They follow him. What we see in Revelation 14 is the Lamb who was slain has come back to life, and he has followers too. Are you with me? What's ironic is they are just the first fruits of those who follow the beast. That's something to ponder. The faithful witness, remember the unfaithful witness, the false prophet. The false prophet speaks like a what? Dragon. And John, what does that mean? Well, in John 8, it says, you belong to your father, the devil, if you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the what? Truth, for there is no truth in him. When he what? He speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. The number one lie the enemy tells is a lie about the character of God, what God is really like. John, 1 John 2, verse 2, he says, who is the liar? It is whoever denies that Jesus is the Messiah. Remember, there's no lie in their mouth. They're claiming that Jesus is the rightful king, the rightful ruler. Such a person is the who? Antichrist, denying the Father and the Son. In Revelation 3, 14, Jesus is called the faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation. In John 18, Jesus said it himself. He says that I have come to bear, the reason I came into the world was to bear witness to the truth. Those who follow the Lamb have no lie in their mouth. They're bearing that true witness of Jesus. Are you with me so far? Now the last part, this sacrifice. How do they bear witness to the truth? Look at 1 Peter 1:19. But with the precious blood of Christ, which is a lamb, what does it say? Without blemish or what? Again, remember, first century Christians did not see this as an instead of, but exemplary. This was not what Jesus was instead of us. It was what we are called to be as well. And that is why the army here, no lie is found in their mouth. They have a faithful witness about Jesus in their testimony, and they are, what does it say? Without blemish. They're willing to sacrifice their own. They did not love their lives even unto death. They bear that same sacrificial language. Revelation 14, 6 through 7. The next thing that John sees after he sees this 144,000, is I saw an angel flying in midair, and he had the, what does it call it? Eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth. To every nation. These are the ones that are following the beast. Here's these ones who aren't following the beast, but the majority is following the beast, even those who used to follow the Lamb. There comes an angel crying out to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He said in a loud voice, fear God and do what? Give him glory, because the hour of his just and equitous reign has come. Worship him who made heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water. Remember, that's the area that's being contested between the trumpets and the plagues. Trying to throw all this together for you, it'll become clear. That part will become clear when we get to the plagues. Look at Matthew 24, 14. Jesus has said this, and this gospel of the kingdom, this new kingdom that has arrived, will be preached or proclaimed in the, how much of it? Whole world as a testimony to how many? All nations, right there, even Jesus is quoting from Psalms chapter 2. And then the end will what? Then the end will come. We have to ask ourselves, what is the end? Is it the conversion of the nations or the destruction of the nations? How does God destroy his enemies? How does a lamb destroy his enemies? Psalms 96, 1 through 3. Sing to the Lord a what? Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord his praise. Praise his name. Proclaim, there it is, Revelation 14, 6 and 7 again. Proclaim his salvation or his victory day after day. And what the Hebrew infers is day after day after day after day at all times, eternally. It is an eternal gospel that is being proclaimed. If you can see that, say yes. And it says, declaring his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. In Psalms 96, verse 7, it says, and the Lord, ascribe to the Lord all you families of the nations. Remember, it's to every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. The first word that John uses in Revelation 14 is nations. Remember, he changes it each time. How many have noticed that? Every time he uses those four, it's in a little different order. The first word that he uses in every one of those is what calls you to go back and look for that word in the Old Testament. And these are the verses that begin to pop up. All you families of the nations, ascribe to the Lord, what does it say? Glory. Isn't that what the angel says? Fear God and give glory to Him. Ascribe to the Lord glory, do His name, bring an offering, come into His temple courts, and worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble. There's that word fear again. Before Him. How much of it? This is the same thing. Fear God and give Him glory, for the hour of His just and equitous reign has come. In Psalms 96, verse 5, it says, for all the gods of, what does it say? The nations are what? But the Lord made the... How many actually went and looked at that God of the heavens outline? Did anybody look at that when you went home yet? Nobody? A couple of you got a chance to. Good. The rest of you, I'm sure you're going to. Psalms 96, 10 through 13. Say among the nations, the Lord does what? Reigns. The word is firmly established. It cannot be moved. He will, what does it say? Judge the peoples with what? Let all creation rejoice in the Lord, for He comes. He comes to what? Judge the earth. Remember, this is not retributive justice. This is restorative justice. He's coming to set things right. He will judge the world in what? And the people in His faithfulness. Again, in Isaiah 40, 41, and 52, and 61... This good news was always proclaimed to Israel, but in the first angel's message, who is it proclaimed to? Every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. In Luke 4, this is what would have caused the problems. Remember, all the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up and drove him out of the town and took him to the brow of the hill in which it was built in order to throw him off the what? Off the cliff. Why were they wanting to throw Jesus off a cliff? Because He announced the favor of the Lord, not just on Israel, but also on Israel's enemies. What John is doing is he's saying all this stuff that was promised to Israel, in the book of Revelation, we're going to see it's also promised to who? Every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people, even its enemies. Would that have been enough to tick some people off in the first century? Is it enough to tick some people off today if you say all are going to worship the Lamb? Would that be enough? Yes. What do you do with the universal language of the book of Revelation? Well, we haven't gotten there yet, but once again, we're just being honest with the language as it reads. We're still going to get to Revelation 19 and 20, I promise. But just bear with me. Let the discomfort of universalism change the way you view them. You see, as long as someone is destined for hell in your mind, it will affect the way you treat them. If someone is hellbound, you will treat them differently than if you see them as being heavenbound and they just don't know it yet. Doesn't that produce a different treatment? This is what the book of Revelation is trying to get us to. Start looking at every person you meet as just someone who hasn't seen Jesus yet. They're kingdom bound. I'm not a heaven or hell subscriber. I'm a this age or the next age subscriber. I'm a new heavens and a new earth right here subscriber. There's a kingdom. Each person you meet is not destruction bound. Each person you meet is kingdom bound. And it's your job to introduce that to them through not so much judgment as it is through love. Loving, humble servant, service. Again, look in your grace section just real quick. Well, we looked at the day after day after day. We're out of time. Kings of, Revelation 21, 12, 24, look at that in your grace section. Remember again how it ends up. The kings of the earth will bring their, what does it say? Splendor into it. Revelation 11, 13, remember it talks about every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people giving glory to the God of heaven. Yes, we talked about that as well. Flip over to the back. And they, Revelation 7, the 104,000, cried out with a loud voice, salvation or victory belongs to who? God who sits on the throne and to the what? What is victory for the Lamb? The Lamb is called the ruler of the kings of this world. What would be victory for him but to finally get every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people out of following the dragon and now following the Lamb? That would be victory on his part. Psalms 96, 1 through 10, or sorry, 1 through 10. So 96 through 100. Man, I love the way my brain automatically does that sometimes. Psalms 96, actually I don't. Psalms 96 through 100. Those are the texts that the first angel's message is taken from. Even the thematic grouping of these texts is about Yahweh's universal lordship and his coming to reign and a call to the nations to worship him. So actually your homework this time is actually go home and read Psalms 96, Psalms 97, Psalms 98, Psalms 99, and Psalms 100. You'll see the whole message of the book of Revelation in those Psalms. Revelation 15:4. We're going to get to this tomorrow night, but notice how it ends up. Who will not fear you, Lord, and bring what? Glory to your name. Remember what was called. The first angel calls them, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment or his just and equitous reign has come. Revelation 15, which is just one chapter later, says, who will not fear you, O Lord, and bring glory to your name? For you alone are what? All nations will come and worship before you, for your righteous acts have been what? Revealed. Beautiful passages. Do we have time to do this? Yes, and I'll take a chance. I'll still try to get you out of here. Revelation 14, 8 through 3. A second angel followed and said, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, which made all the nations drink of the maddening wine of her adulteries. All the nations are drunk right now with her adulteries. A third angel followed them. In a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast, let me just say this, for the sake of time, that Babylon is fallen. We're going to see that again in Revelation 18. For the sake of time, would you wait for tomorrow night to understand that Babylon? Can I go into that in more detail tomorrow night? Would that be okay so I can just let you go home? Would that be fine? Okay, so we'll cover the Babylon is fallen tomorrow night, the second angel's message. The third angel's message, it says, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives the mark on his forehead or on their hand, they too will drink of the wine of God's fury. We'll define that tomorrow night, which has been poured out full strength into the cup of his what? Now remember, the wrath of the Lamb looks very different than the wrath of a human. How many would agree with that? We're talking about the wrath of Gandhi. Do you remember that again? Britain would be very slow to provoke the wrath of Gandhi. I know once we've already covered this, so go back and listen if that's a strange phrase to you. We explained it the other night for the sake of time. We cannot do it tonight. It says they will be, what's the word? With burning sulfur in the what? Presence of the Lamb and the holy angels. And the smoke of their, what's that word again? Torment will rise forever and ever. What I want you to notice is there's no loss of life here. This is actually a good thing in this imagery. Nobody's dying, they're just being what? Tormented in the presence of the Lamb. There'll be no rest day or night for those who worship the beast in his image or anyone who receives the mark of his name. This is to be taken metaphorically, not literally. In the gray section, Isaiah 34, this language is used for Edom. And is Edom still burning today? Is its smoke still rising literally? It's to be taken metaphorically. But what John's trying to say is if you follow after Nero, when you see the Lamb and you finally see how you've been deceived, you will experience what in that moment? Torment. And you have one of two choices in that torment. You can either hold on to your rebellion against the Lamb or you can submit to the Lamb. But this is what I'm contesting. If any are lost at last, it will only be because the community that the Lamb is trying to build on this planet will be a place of torment for them. Do you hear what I'm saying? If any are lost, it will be not because they weren't good enough, not because they didn't convince God to forgive, not because they didn't do enough. It'll be because the kind of community that the Lamb finally establishes on this planet will be a place of eternal torment for them. And God does not believe in eternally tormenting anyone. Are you hearing what I'm saying? It says in... and this calls for patient endurance on the part of the people of God who again do what? keep his commandments. They're obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross, just like Jesus. They follow the teachings of Jesus. We already covered that tonight. And the faith of Jesus. They have the testimony of Jesus. Then I heard a voice from heaven say, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. What does it say? From now on, yes, says the Spirit, they will rest from their labors and their deeds will follow on after them. Okay, this is it is 9:05 right now. We're going to end right here. Now, you see, you still have one more handout. Are you with me? In order to finish Revelation 14, we are going to have to do this last part of Revelation 14 tomorrow night. But there's the risk of you losing the connection between Revelation, the last part of Revelation 14, and this army of the Lamb, the 144,000, and these three angels and their proclamation. If you can promise me that we can pick up here tomorrow and you'll remember the army of the Lamb and the three angels and their proclamations, and let me tie those into this next section without having to repeat everything, I will let you go right now. How many can make me that promise? That's pretty easy, isn't it? We can do that, right? All right, don't get lost between now and tomorrow night. We're not done with tonight's presentation. All the summaries and conclusions, I'm letting you go without making. You're going to leave here tonight saying, well, what was that all about? Well, the conclusions come at the beginning of tomorrow night. And then tomorrow night, we'll cover Revelation 15 and get as far as we can. Saturday morning, right here at the church, we will begin again and go as far as we can. And then Saturday night, we will try to land, get as far as we can and land at the end of chapter 22. If we do accomplish this, and it's an if at this stage, if we do accomplish this, we will have covered the entire book of Revelation in 1 week. How many think that's astounding? All right, come back tomorrow night. We will see you there. Let me pray and I'll let you go. Father, thank you so much for your goodness and for your love. And keep us safe as we go home. Bring us back safe tomorrow. And above all else, Father, help us learn how to love our enemies. Help us how to look at them as kingdom-bound rather than hell-bound. And help us to follow the Lamb. In your precious name we pray all this. Amen. Thanks for coming. We'll see you tomorrow night.